so on and so forth. Thank you. Sorry, I can't translate. Yeah, this is actually available online. You can go to Our Sound Universe and order Coming on the Backs of Whales. Susan Alexander is a bioacoustic composer. I met her when she was 40. I think she's now 80. Could that be true? I think it is. And she's also done a lot of real interesting bioacoustic samplings with DNA, quasars, and so on. She told me once if her grandchildren ever knew what she was doing, they'd lock her up because she has a room about this size with strings going from the ceiling to the floor in all different directions, matching up sounds from the planets and stars that she's measured with scientists to our marine life in the ocean. And what she has found is that these sounds that are in opposite places, right, spaces, create perfect harmonics. Perfect harmonics. So get on her website. She's published a lot of articles. And, you know, there's something going on that's so much bigger than what we know as human beings. This idea of sound and harmonics. Imagine the Milky Way, the stirring of the planets, the quasars, the black holes, all that have been measured and we know make sound of some kind. Coming into unison, into harmonics, into harmony with ocean life. This is profound. So as we think about these things and we talk about it for the afternoon, it's going to be a great afternoon, we need to remember that idea there's something bigger than us, this idea of spiritual renewal that Howie was talking about on our last panel before lunch, this idea of science and art and spirit merging and emerging to lead the way towards healing everything that's been going on. So with that, I am so honored to introduce my friend and colleague, Michael Stocker. Michael's an extraordinary acoustic scientist, and he will tell you more about what he does.
Thanks. Hey.
Hey, Michael. Thanks so much.
So, yeah, that's good. Take that off. So I'm honored to be here. Thank you guys for hanging out this afternoon. What I'm going to do is kind of try to compress it as much as I can, but into 35 slides, which means I'm going to have less than a minute per slide, but we'll make it happen. Talking about the ocean as an acoustic environment, the sources of ocean noise pollution, what impacts it has, and some solutions that we're working on and other people are working on. So with no further ado, the ocean as an acoustic environment. It's dark down there. Animals need to get around at night. They don't just take a nap and wait for the sun to come up and you get down a couple hundred feet. There's absolutely no sunlight or very little sunlight at all. So you get into this situation where they actually need sound to calibrate their relationship with their surroundings. And there's a lot of different variations on it, a lot of different adaptations. This is something that you hear pretty much in all temperate waters. I heard it in that particular take there from Susan Alexander. You hear it in the background. It's a snapping shrimp. And they snap with their claw like that. This is slow motion. It creates a cavitation bubble, and that bubble pops, and it's so loud that it stuns the prey of the little zooplankton around them. So they stun the prey, and then they eat the zooplankton. That's their way of getting around. This happens to be a manta shrimp, actually two manta shrimps, a male and a female, and they build these tunnels. They live in together for 20 and sometimes up to 30 years. And when they get in the mood, they sing these little songs to each other. They're purring. And this is really the sound of a healthy reef here. Shrimp, you hear various birds, fish, sounding like birds. Yeah, it's a beautiful sound. So those are, you know, essentially fairly simple. This is one that baffled a lot of people until they found out what it was. One sounds hipper. And this is an aggregation of croakers. Croakers are basically dispersal breeders. So they get together and they... And when they all get excited enough, they start distributing their spermatozoans and their eggs, and it turns into a big croaker orgy. So everybody knows this one. I was actually up in Alaska a couple of weeks ago, and I was in a bar restaurant, and I started playing sounds this. And literally three people in the restaurant said, "Humpback whale." They're so impressed. We heard at the end of Susan's take there this pulsing that was going on, kind of and that was actually, it's in the Rorqual family, that was a fin whale, but it's related to these guys here, the minke whale. I have a paper out and presenting on chorusing behavior of animals, and the minkes, it seems like they actually chorus like crickets. They synchronize with each other in those pulses. What else do we have? What's coming next? Oh, the carpenter. An old one for the sperm whales. It sounds like a bunch of journeyman carpenters, you know, on Monday morning trying to... and of course, I think everybody knows this one. I could listen to this all afternoon long. It's really great. The challenge, of course, we have is that we're also inhabiting the ocean, and particularly since the beginning of the mechanization of transportation, we have shipping noise pretty much everywhere. And if those of you saw the movie last night saw the impact of shipping noise on marine habitat in the northern southern hemisphere. But there are some 60,000 boats at any given time, big ships, on the ocean transporting cargo. And they might sound like this. So it's one of the problems, because all those really sweet sounds of the orcas and all these other animals, it gets drowned out by this broadband thumping nasty sound. Here's another problem we're having is a seismic survey is looking for fossil fuel in the ocean. And this is just one. We're doing a survey right now. We're monitoring a survey that just stopped on Thursday, but they're kicking off those explosions every 3 to 5 seconds around the clock for a month and a half. So we've got that recorded. They're doing this everywhere in the world, but what they have is, this is an air gun. You'll see this. This is not going to sound, this one here. Oh, what? There it goes. So they'll have an array of those. This is a small, this is like a 40-inch gun, a small one. But that pulse hits, creates this boom, it goes down into the substrate, it picks up the perturbations of the strata underneath the ocean floor, kicks back a signal, which they then have these streamers, and they listen to that, they synthesize it, process it, and they figure out what it actually looks like down, you know, where the oil deposits are and where it's most fruitful to do that work. The deeper water requires, you know, more air gun energy, deeper deposits as well. As I said, this is a streamer. It's basically got six going on behind it, but the one we were monitoring had 14, and there's ones that have up to as many as 40 devices and 4,000 cubic inches. And these are the, oops, I'm sorry, this boat here. Can you see? Oh, I see. I need actually have my, that guy, that's a Ramform PGS. And that boat was designed to do surveys on the Atlantic seaboard, which we managed to be, you know, keep at bay for the last, well, they wanted to start doing it since 2007. Ramform was actually built in 2014. It's a $1 billion boat. And these guys are, yeah, they want to get their money back. So that, well, they, and it's really designed for really specific types of seismic work. This is where they're doing it in the world right now. So if you stuck a hydrophone in the Mid-Atlantic Ridge here, you could hear Brazil, you could hear that, not some of the Gulf of Mexico is shallow here, but you'd hear up in the Bay of Fundy in this area, Hudson Bay area, and you'd hear the you know, off of Norway. You would hear this roar and clatter of these things 1,000 miles away, or 1,500 miles away. And what are they doing with that? This is another component of it that they're not really speaking about from a sound standpoint, but they're building these seafloor processing plants. It's kind of a, it's a refinery, it's a pre-refinery. When you stick a straw into the earth, you don't pull out oil and gas that you can use. You pull out this slurry of all kinds of stuff, toxic materials, sand, brine. And so they don't want to pull that stuff all the way up to the surface because it's expensive and they got to do something with it. So they have all this equipment down below. They separate it and then they re-inject the stuff that they don't want back into the earth, and then they pull the stuff they do want up. But that is mechanical sound, and this is what it sounds like. So when, wherever they have those things, which is essentially where they have this stuff here, around the clock, 24 hours a day, forever, it's going to sound like that. And then, of course, every few months they have to do another seismic survey to determine the condition of the drawdown. So there's a lot of noise being created out there, which is not being regulated because people are not really thinking about it. And what are those pieces of equipment? This is a seafloor separator. See these three little guys there? It's a big piece of equipment. And this is a reinjection pump, and see that's not a matchbox. That's a, you know, just for size comparison. It's also not on the bottom of the ocean, but it's a size comparison. And if you look at the noise that the stuff creates, this is just a single pump, turbo compressor, and it's well above the continuous noise threshold of 120 dB, and it's a continuous noise. So these are out of compliance in terms of a regulatory standpoint. And there's other noises that were being introduced down there. In order to control all that equipment, they have to have ways of communicating to service vessels, autonomous AUVs that are going down and turning knobs on and opening up valves and, you know, adjusting pipes and things like that. And they communicate through these communication networks, digital communication networks. And again, these are things that are being set off in large areas. So we're colonizing huge areas of the ocean. And these might be areas that had been productive feeding areas for dolphins or porpoises or the cetaceans, the odontocetes that would hear this level of noise, this type of noise. But here's some examples. So you add that to the other humming and you know, we're essentially acoustically colonizing huge areas of the ocean, much to the stress of the animals that are there. If you were here last night at the point in the movie where they said, and they don't have any doors to walk out of, and all of a sudden this alarm went off, and we could walk out, but even then we're outside, and we're, so where do we sit with, and you know, it's hard. There was an awful lot of this happening. They're starting to get a little bit more wise about it, but we were getting catastrophic strandings of marine mammals as a consequence of some of these underwater sonar systems. And this is one of the culprits here. This is Charlie 53. And that'll, you know, that will go until they're done with their operation. So we have, you know, we have a serious problem with the noise in the ocean. Again, the Navy is getting a little wiser about this. I mean, they don't like seeing this stuff. This is 800 dolphins, and this was from a NATO exercise. And the collection of pictures I have from this, because somebody sent me a bunch of this stuff, and they had it was like a buoy. It was a seismic Taylor buoy. It wasn't sound making. He says, "Is this making it?" No, this is a military thing. So we ended up excavating that, and finding some problems.
Did you say 800?
800. Yeah, this was in Madagascar. They were doing a NATO exercise off Madagascar, and 800 dolphins, and you know, including you know, so some of the pictures I have from this are females with aborted babies. You know, they're little babies that just, and they're on the, or animals that have been bitten by sharks, because when they can't hear, when you deafen them, they don't know what's going on. So one of the reasons we think they might be beaching themselves is because, you know, why live if we're going to be eaten slowly by sharks? So we're introducing a lot of new technologies. As I said, the deep water subsea, hydrocarbon exploration production. Offshore wind has got its problems. They've got these large masts with these transmissions as gears up on gearboxes upstairs, and they transmit down into the column. Offshore tidal has got its own collection of noises. Power distribution, as Doug was saying, talking about earlier today. Different types of resource mining, methane hydrate mining, which is at the edge of the continental shelf. There's a lot of methane hydrates there. It's going to take a lot of mechanical energy to get that out, like any mining. Any deep water minerals mining. Outer continental, well, just navigation beacons in general. And I'm trying to get people alerted to this. Finally, Bureau of Ocean Energy Management is starting to pay attention to me. But the people at NOAA, Office of Protected Resources, is like, I can't wake them up. But The Navy is proposing a global GPS system, which would mean there would be buoys every 10 to 20 kilometers in the ocean, all kicking out some digital sound. And because of the physics of sound transmission in the water, this would be in the human hearing range, so it would be somewhere between 10 and 20 kilohertz, probably more like 10 and 12. And that means when you're out in Hawaii on beautiful moonlit night with the glassy waters and bobbing, and you hear the coming through the hull of your boat. Everywhere in the ocean. It's like, stop, don't do that. Bad idea. Outer continental shelf, sorry. So the multinodal communication networks I was talking about, and low frequency active over the horizon communication for fish finding and stuff like that. So these are noises that we're introducing, already exist, or developing. I didn't put any of these sounds on here. But the tip vortices on these things are also, aside from the gearboxes, you hear this kind of you know, every 3 seconds because it's going pretty slow. We don't know what the impact is. There's places like in the Black Sea where when they were installing, they were not on these floating masts. These are ones that we'd be putting off California. These ones are in shallower waters. They have pile driving. So there's ways of isolating. I'll show you that in a minute. But in both the North Sea, off the coast of England and off the coast of Holland, when they were installing these things, all the harbor porpoises and harbor seals just left the area. In the Black Sea, they've recruited back to it. Now there's vertical feeding space, and it's actually maybe fisheries collecting around here. The problem with these masts like that is they have to be anchored down with these wires, and there's really nothing in the behavioral repertoire of the whales that migrate to know that there's actually a big wire that they're going to run into. So they could bump their heads, bump their fins or whatever. But, you know, that was a question somebody asked about what the impacts of offshore wind are. But, you know, here we are. The pile driving, again, it's just this kind of this pounding and the sound goes out into the surroundings. Where this was first seen as a problem when they were actually doing the seismic retrofit in 2000 on the Bay Bridge, they were pile driving, and all of a sudden they started realizing all these seabirds that were feeding on the top of the water. And they were feeding on what? They were feeding on juvenile fish, you know, mostly salmon smolt. And so they stopped. We're going to figure out how to solve this problem. And a friend of mine did a lot of modeling on that. Found out that these fish, it wasn't just the noise itself, it was the impulse of the barotrauma that was actually blowing these animals up that had these little swim bladders. So it was actually blowing them up from the inside, rupturing their kidneys. That was a lot of fun. These are interesting. They haven't really gotten a lot of progress on this. It's still a little wonky. They float on top of the water, and by flexing over the swells, they actually create hydraulic pressure inside. But they crank and they clang, and they're, you know, so it's not what you call necessarily quiet. This is one that was really surprising. I've got the fishing efforts here. Seal bombs are used to scare seals away from nets and fishing efforts. The seals, you know, when they hear that there's fish being stressed out, they know there's easy prey. And so you'll be catching, you know, reeling in a fish, and all of a sudden it gets lighter, and you pull in just the head, and the seal's gotten the rest. So fishermen have been kind of permitted to use these seal bombs, which are about the size of, I don't know if you guys know, M80s. It's like a quarter of a stick of dynamite. And they, you know, light them and throw them in the water, and it harasses the seals. But this was from the Mars project, which is the offshore seismic, offshore hydrophone off of Monterey Bay that John Ryan is running. And if you look at the numbers of seal bombs per hour, per day, you know, it's an interesting metric. You know, we're talking about, in some cases, hundreds of them over the course of a day. And this is opening day at Bristol Bay, so there's obviously the propeller problem. And deep sea mining, this is one of the ways of doing it. This boat is not walking, actually. It looks like it's kind of wandering around like a fish, like a walking fish or a chicken. But it's sucking up mineral supplies, and they process it up here. They don't talk about the plumes, but there's also going to be mechanical noise there. They have these, you know, essentially little steam shovels and things like that. They're excavators that are going to be down there. Kind of, you know, they're electric. They're not run on, you know, air breathing fuel. But so that at least you don't have that sound of mechanics. But there is mechanical noise associated with it. So what are the impacts? I think it was Doug mentioned earlier, they mentioned certainly last night, the elevated stress levels, the cortisol levels of these animals increases significantly when they're being stressed out with sound. Just like, if we did our cortisol last night when this alarm went off, we'd all be like, what's going on? And it's not just unpleasant, it also compromises these animals' ability to breed, and migratory disruptions happen. A friend of mine was Manuel Castellote, who's I'm working with up on this project up in Alaska right now. He was monitoring the migration of fin whales between the Ligurian Sea, which is up in Italy, you know, on the western side of Italy, down to Malta, where they were breeding and feeding. The fin whales pulse like at the end of that particular take from Susan Alexander. The pulsing, the common pulsing is an interval of 10 to 15 seconds. And so he was monitoring for 3 years. The first 2 years, they successfully did their migrations. The third year, they went partway down, and then they went back to the Ligurian Sea. And so he scanned around with his arrays to find out what was going on, and found that there was a seismic survey happening on the Costa Sul off of Spain. And the pulse interval was about the same pulse interval as the fin whale. So it's just conjecture, but there's a possibility that these animals thought there's some strange version of ourselves down there that are relentlessly making noise, and they're not synchronizing with us, they're not communicating with us, and they might have spooked them. It's just one of the thoughts, anyways. Of course, behavioral disruptions. Let's get out of here. This is scaring me. And then physical damage to internal organs, as I mentioned, with the fish, but also one of the things that they found with the beaked whales and in the Bahamas is that these animals essentially responded to a startle response. And because they had compressed gases in their bodies, when they headed up to the surface, is which marine mammals do, their first impulse is, I need air. And they headed up too fast, and they got the bends. Their insides look like milkshakes. But the other, like the impulse from the pile driving on the fish, that was, you know, it rupture the kidneys and often rupture their swim bladders. So, and of course, hearing compromise. When you have a loud noise, it shifts your threshold. And if you do that enough, your hearing gets worse and worse. And if you need sound really to get around, like we need eyesight, it's not a good solution. Okay, zooplankton mortality. This is what we're studying. There's a seismic survey, as I mentioned, that's just stopped on Thursday. But there seems to be evidence of zooplankton mortality around these surveys. And so we went up there, we put our moorings in the day before the survey started. It was like, oh my God, we gotta do this fast. And then 2 weeks ago we went and we did some zooplankton samples right in front of the survey ship and immediately behind it to see if there was in fact zooplankton damage. And it appears, anecdotally, initially we do. What we have to do, so we dyed them. We put them in a neutral dye. The ones that are alive and respire this dye, and it dyes their internal organs, and the ones that are dead don't. So you see the difference quite clearly between ones that are dead and ones that are alive. And that's in the lab right now. Let's see. Yeah, I don't want to get into too technical on it. So what I think is happening, if you remember that that one air gun, you had this bubble that went out, and then it went in really fast. Animals are built to handle pressure gradients, because they go up and down the water column. So I don't think that's what's happening. What I think is happening is when you have the inverse, when it retracts, you have a negative barotrauma, and no animal's body is prepared to handle that. It's like what would happen if we jumped out of an airplane at 30,000 feet, our blood would boil, because we're not designed to handle negative pressure like that. So if that proves to be the case, I say these are in the lab right now, we're going to further that particular research by getting an air gun and doing cage studies, high-speed video cage studies of zooplankton and finding out what the modality is. So there's some solutions. Yay! Okay, the top one, stop buying crap from overseas. Consumer society is really, really killing us. Ride your bicycle, take public transit, carpool, and roll back the overmilitarization of the world. I mean, those things are really systematic problems that we're really backed ourselves into a cul-de-sac on, and we really need to stop it. And it's getting painfully apparent. And fortunately, it's also getting obvious from a public communication standpoint. So technical solutions, I'll detail these a little bit more in the next 5 minutes that I have here. Quieting technologies and vessel design, they do things like decouple vibrating machinery from the hull so you don't get this hull radiation of vibration. Damping, attenuating mechanical noises. For the surveys, there's a marine vibrosize, I'll show you that in a second. You can isolate the sounds, and for example, the pile driving, there's different ways of isolating that sound from the water around it. And one of the things that we're working on a lot is deriving more comprehensive propagation models, because regulation really hinges on ability to be able to understand what the impact is at the animal. And most of the propagation models that are being used in the environmental impact statements from the Navy and industry, whatever, are very rudimentary. They're relying on this model that you know, was kind of, what can I say, it's high school physics. And then create more accurate noise exposure metrics. So to get us a little bit deeper here, this is a standard propeller. You see the cavitation. All those bubbles are making all kinds of noise. I was working with a company called PAX Scientific for a while, and this is a propeller that they've designed, and they've got a couple of variations on this. In order to get this to cavitate, we actually had to stick it under a negative tor, which means that we had to depressurize so we'd actually see the disruption. And obviously, even if it was cavitating like that, it would be a less stochastic noise and more consistent sound, probably a little bit less damaging for the animals. So the seismic survey stuff, this is marine vibrosize. There's a couple of different variations in this theme, but instead of having what this does is creates, it's the same amount of energy but spread over a longer period of time. So it's quieter. And so you can actually create the signals that are below regulatory thresholds that are not as damaging to the animals in terms of impulse noise. In terms of long-term or continuous sound, I think it's still problematic, but it's, I think it's an improvement. Here are some isolation techniques here. This is a bubble curtain. They have one down here. The problem with this is you can only go so deep because it takes a lot of energy to push the air down that far. This is another friend of mine, Mark Workner, has designed this whole thing. These are Helmholtz resonators. And there's other couple of other resonator designs people are using right now. And it does actually attenuate the sound propagation from the pole out into the surrounding area. Where are we at here? Okay. More accurate propagation models. I don't want to get into the science of this, but the things like the speed of sound in the water, that has some bearing on attenuation over distance. There's a whole thing that I did a paper on what is the communication network at high frequency propagation models of this, and because they usually are doing regulation on a point source basis. They have one piece of equipment and they say, well, that's only kicking out 190 dB at this frequency, so it attenuates in this particular. That's not how it works. You don't have one piece of equipment. You have lots of them, and you have to look at the entire field. This is some of the scrambled eggs we do to make it work. We're doing another thing on the signal kurtosis, sound quality. So all the signals that they've been using to set regulatory thresholds are usually pure tones or band-limited pink noise. They're pleasant sounds. But the sounds, as we heard some of the sounds earlier, they're not all pleasant. And so we are coming up with a metric that expresses what they call kurtosis. Kurtosis has to do with variability of sets over time, but we find that is a lot worse than and so we have a way of evaluating the difference between that, even if with equal energy level. And it's not just more annoying, it's also more physically damaging. So we have all the bits pulled together. We have to find out there's one variable that I'm looking for, which hopefully I'll have by the time I have to give this paper in December on this kurtosis metric. But if we have more accurate exposure models, impact models, then we can actually start changing our signals that we're using. We don't have to use those nasty digital signals. We can use signals that sound more like beluga whales. We'd be doing biomimicry, sounds that animals may not be able to translate directly but would be more familiar with. So those are the types of solutions that we're looking at. If we have a metric which expresses impacts and we can use that to model the sounds that we make, then we can actually come up with solutions to those problems and not stop the whole train or get everybody out of the pool immediately. So summary, ocean is acoustic environment. Military industry is colonizing the ocean. New technology being introduced. New noises are being introduced. And there's some solutions to decrease our impact on marine life. And there we are. Thank you. And I'm going to put my book up here. I got a book. I got a box of books if somebody wants a book. Thanks.
Well, I guess I can take this down. Thank you, Michael. Wow. Whew. We can do a few questions and we have to move on. Yeah.
We've managed to keep the exploration off the Atlantic and Pacific right now. The current administration is just itching to get oil wells off of here because they want to punish us for being Californians. And the Atlantic Sea, but where is it happening? You saw that map. It's happening everywhere. Well, it depends on where they are. I mean, every condition. I mean, off Angola, they have to have military boats defend those things because there's a lot of pirates out there that see value. Namibia is a different story. It's more civil. So every nation has a relationship. Brazil is it's open for business right now. There is now. Thanks. Yeah, my organization, Ocean Conservation Research, is OCR.org. I've been working on this since 92, and OCR has been around since 2007. There's a lot of material on there. There's a sound library. There's a trail of detritus that I've left behind me. So go there.
All right, thank you, Michael. Woohoo!